Welcome back to another season of West Coast's podcast, BC's Path to Universal Childcare, as we discuss our various journeys while our province continues to create and reimagine our childcare system in BC. We must always honor the wisdom of Indigenous ways of knowing. I would like to recognize with respect and gratitude the First Nations that have nurtured the children of this land in waterways from time immemorial. This is only a small way to acknowledge their presence both in the past and the present, and to remind us that colonialism is a current ongoing process which continues to impact Indigenous people's ways of being. We are guests and neighbors on these lands on which we extend our support and services, like this podcast, which is recorded on the traditional unceded lands of the Coast Salish people, including the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations, as well as the Inuit and Métis people of BC. Today, there are more than 200 distinct First Nations in BC, approximately 200,000 Indigenous people with their own unique traditions and history. Crystal.
Thank you so much, Nora, for starting this third season off in such a way that honors the lands that we are living, working, and being together with today. As I said, this is our third season, and this is the first episode of that season. In fact, it's our 18th episode since we started the podcast 2 years ago. We have the good, we've had the great and wonderful fortune to interview so many influential educators, advocates, and policymakers over the past few years. And I think Nora and I both agree that it's just really enlightened and enhanced our own knowledge on childcare policies and the direction of childcare in the province and moving forward. And as the province is in the sixth year of its 10-year childcare plan, we thought it was really important to check in and see how the changes in childcare policy and the initiatives are impacting new educators to the sector.
Thank you, Crystal. And today we are going to meet two early childhood education students from VCC, Tatiana Abi Farage and Derek Dubois. And while they are ECE students, both have been in the field for over 5 years, and they have insights to share with us as they continue their education and career path in childcare. As always, our wonderful friend and colleague, the amazing Gita Chad, is here to take us through this conversation. Welcome, dear Gita, and over to you.
Thank you so much, dear Nora and Crystal. Delighted as well to have this time to talk with and learn with Tatiana and Derek, both of whom I know because they were students at the Vancouver Community College in one of the classes that I taught not so long ago. So we're going to begin with the question, please share with us what brought you into the early childhood education profession. And I wonder, Tatiana, if you might begin and then we'll move to Derek.
Yes, I would love to begin. So honestly speaking, for me, I was brought into the ECE profession because I always loved working with young children. Even when I was young myself, I would always be like next to my mom, cooking in the kitchen, playing with the children that were younger than me. And in my family, I also took care of my younger cousins all the time. And I just had a very like nurturing personality and just had an interest of like learning about different things within the field. And I really did enjoy working with younger children. And I think that's just always been a thing for me. I really do love how curious they are, how observant they are, how smart they are, how clever they are. And it just really just brought that to me, brought that attention to me. And When I was young as well, it was hard for me in school. I feel like a lot of teachers didn't really understand me. I have ADHD, and it was kind of hard for me in school to kind of adjust to some particular programs. And I got told a lot that I was not smart. And that was really challenging for me. So I think from that, I really thought I want to be an educator because I want to guide and help children that are struggling and that. To know that they have a place in the world and they have a place to grow and to learn and to explore different things. So that's really what brought me to the field.
What a beautiful response. Personal, focusing on your home, your family, your cousins, talking about your own ADHD and your commitment to guiding and helping children find their positive place in the world. Thanks so much. Derek, over to you. What brought you into the early childhood world?
Well, when it comes to me and early childhood education, I would say it was a blessing in disguise. It's a big time. When I actually, I'm originally from Alberta, and moving to BC, I actually went to Vancouver, no, sorry, Vancouver Film School to study acting. And I realized the more I went into acting, the more I felt like the industry wasn't the right fit for me. And after some points in time, I started working in customer service on and on and on. And then there was a moment, and I, like I say, this is a blessing in disguise. There was a moment where I actually got laid off from my job, and I felt really devastated that I got laid off. But one of my friends was telling me, it's like, oh, you should go to Workplace BC. You should really, go and investigate with them. So I did that. I took some of their personality tests. And funny enough, the first thing that popped up was acting. I said, oh no, I don't, I'm good with that. I'm good with that. Second one was clergy. I was like, I think I'm good for now. Third one was comedy, and I studied comedy and acting. So I was like, ah, it's the same thing. I'm good for now. And then the fourth one was teacher. And for myself, I thought, oh, I don't think I'm smart enough to be a teacher. I don't think I could possibly do it. But funny enough, the government actually had a projection all the way in 2018 for early childhood education and its growth that was happening. And with the Vancouver Community College, they actually had a prototype program. They shorted it for the PBLMT program, that they said, hey, you know what? If you want to be an early childhood educator, by all means, we have the funds for you to go and do school. And I was hesitant at first. I wasn't too sure if early childhood education was the right fit for me because I'm a fun person, but then sometimes I wondered, would I be fun with the kids? I don't know if I would be fun. But I took a limp, I not a limp, sorry, a jump. And after that, I just fell in love with the passion. I felt like this was really the right fit for me because being with the children, I can see how much I make an impact on these children, how much I make a difference with these children. And at the same time, it's very fulfilling for me to be in this field. So, like I said, it was a blessing in disguise. Literally a blessing in disguise that this all happened.
Thanks so much, Derek, and love your phrase, a blessing in disguise, and also sharing with us some of your earlier work environments that, for whatever reason, weren't the real fit for you. And we know, especially these days, it's not at all uncommon that for a lot of younger people, they may go through four or five different fields of studies till they really find their passion. So, as you said, you fell in love with the early childhood world and the capacity, as Tatiana said, to have a real impact and make a positive difference in the lives of children and their families. Great. So we'll move on to our second question. As you continue your early childhood studies, share with us what have been some of the most beneficial and inspirational components. Tatiana, how about we begin with you?
Well, for starters, I think a really big one was honestly you, Kita. You have inspired me so much. You are such a wonderful lady, and I've heard so many different stories of, within the fields, and like the amount of guest speakers that we had, like Dawn, we had Sharon. We had so many guest speakers, and that's really what inspires me because I'm a very hands-on learner, and I feel that stories are the best way to learn because honestly, in life, you learn from experiences. You learn from being in the field and experiencing the field. And from that, I kind of like grasp like the different people that I've met in the field and that I've learned experiences from them. That's really been a big factor on why I like stay in the field for so long because of all of these experiences that I'm hearing and all the experiences that I have. So really just having that impact of beneficial and like very amazing people in my life that have shown me different sides of the field have really been an inspiration for me.
Thanks so much, Tatiana. So, speaking about your faculty members, your instructors, guest speakers, and the importance of stories and hands-on hearing and learning and integrating and thinking about some of your own and kind of seeing how they integrate and or merge. Wonderful. Thank you. And over to Derek, talk a little bit about inspirational components for you.
Tatiana just took the words right out of my mouth.
A blessing in
Literally,
disguise.
a blessing in disguise. Absolutely. It's really interesting too, because hearing these stories that you hear not only just from other educators, from faculty, even our peers in itself too. Some of the things that I've noticed that with my other classmates, the talents that they have and the stories that they bring to the classroom itself are literal teaching moments that all of us can learn. And I wish that everyone can experience all these stories. It's practically impossible to hear everyone's story, but I find this is such great opportunities for us as not just educators, but students as well, taking these stories and taking these ideas. Even some of the stuff that's handcrafted from some of our assignments is just, it's so inspirational. For example, in the infant and toddler role of the caregiver IT class, we had to make a treasure basket of five different senses for five different, five objects for five different senses. And this one educator handcrafted different materials for infants and toddlers that you could literally, we thought that she bought it from a store, but we knew that she was very talented in what she did. And you can tell that everything was handcrafted and woven in such a beautiful way that it just made me want to know, how do I sew? I'm not joking. I'm very serious. It's a big, big thing. And the fact that each educator has such unique properties of and talents that they have that they bring to the field, I think really would benefit children by a long shot. And I don't think parents really fully understand how much that we as educators, we really bring to the table.
Thanks so much, Derek, and wonderful for sharing some concrete examples of the importance of stories as inspirational. Like, the educator who handcrafted through sewing all the materials for infants and toddlers that would be really valuable to their experience. So many teaching moments built on talents and uniqueness of peers and educators and yourselves. So let's move on to the next question, which asks you, in what curriculum areas would you have wanted or wished for more information, promising practices, concrete examples, provocations? Which areas of your study, which would you have wished to be able to go both broader and deeper? Tatiana, over to you, my dear.
So for me, I feel that BCC really does have a great program, but there are some areas where I feel there could be more expansion. Like, for example, for me, I really want to open my own daycare center, and I would really have loved to see a little bit more of the business side of things for administration. I feel like we kind of learned about different aspects of like different policies and stuff like that. But I think if we learn more of like the business aspect of things and how to like budget things a little bit more, like we didn't spend enough time, I feel, to really grasp that concept fully. So I feel as though that would have been really important to know.
To expand on. So I'm thinking about Tatiana, the three B's, the business side with the budget and getting the best knowledge you can have as an administrator or somebody in the office about, how to prepare the policies, the procedures, the budget, and so on, which is a whole world unto itself, right? The administrative aspects. In addition to, of course, working with the children. Thanks for that input. And Derek, what would you have wished to have a little bit more of or about?
I think for the most part, well, I actually believe for the most part, is have a course specifically on licensing regulations. I know the school really touches on some points through health, safety, and nutrition courses. And I remember when we took our advanced health, safety, and nutrition, we started to go in a little bit more deeper, which gave me a better understanding on how licensing actually works. And it's not just licensing. There's also the community care regulations as well that we as educators we have to look for. And there is such a, I feel that when it comes to licensing and regulations, that everyone gets really intimidated by it because it's such a big document. And I remember for me and Tatiana, we had the pleasure of learning how to look into licensing. A very easy way of doing it without feeling intimidated by it. And at the same time, because right now I know there's some educators out there that they get their licensing regulation sources from their supervisor or their manager and such, which is fine. They have to be on top of licensing itself. But, there is such a misconception where some activities, for example, that we'd be able to provocate within the center, some educators would say, no, you can't do that because it actually goes against licensing. When really, there's like, it doesn't really fully say, there's like some loopholes here and there where some centers I've seen for risky play, for example, they go all out with it. While there's other centers, they're a little bit hesitant. And I can totally understand why they're hesitant too. So I think really making sure that for us as educators, really have a base foundation of why re licensing regulations are what it is, to not feel intimidated by licensing and regulations, being able to understand how to look for information on licensing and regulation. But for the most part, how would we be able to talk to other educators when it comes to licensing and regulation, I think is a key thing to really bring home. I wish that we learned this a lot sooner because the fact that we learned this in the post basic, there's a lot of people that don't take the post basic program. So I think they missed out on a lot and, they're still trying to figure out their way of, how to navigate in this early childhood education field. I think that's a big one.
Thanks so much, Derek, because you bring up what I know in terms of, curriculum planning. Often we think, well, that's just going to be, as you say, overwhelming, intimidating. Let's just stay on the floor with the children. And yet, the vital importance of us knowing how to resource and look into, the community care and the licensing regulations is, very clear. And we also know over time, and currently now you gave the example of risky play, and people have a difference of opinion, as to often and how much children should be taking opportunity with risky play. Still a lot of discourse and contemplation. and reflection about outdoor playtime in a lot of settings that's become almost the focus of the problem or of the issue. And in other settings, the problem might be the kids only have 15 minutes out in the playground. So even appreciating from a licensing standpoint, some of the controversy and issues that are still kind of being deliberated. Love your answer on that from both of you. Thank you. Next question. Once you complete your diploma in early childhood, what next steps do you have in mind regarding your ongoing professional development? Tatiana, ongoing Pro-D, what might you like to say about that?
Well, honestly, right now I'm actually working within the city. This is actually a new position that I got. I'm a support worker within the city. I'm also an on-call sub, and I also work at the before and after school care program. For me, I feel as though I really, like being a child with ADHD, knowing that kind of like challenges growing up, challenges with like emotional regulation, so many different things. I feel as though I really want to embark more on taking care and watching over children, children with special needs and like children with exceptionalities, and just working with that and kind of like building my knowledge on it, taking some more courses, maybe even going into like some more workshops or just finding some resources to get me to fully understand and grasp and be able to help more children. Because you know what, I know that feeling of feeling like you don't belong in a place and you're very much like an outcast. I had that feeling as a child, and I don't want any child to ever feel like that. So for me, I really feel as though I want to embark more on that journey and become more of a support worker and even maybe work in the school system and be a part of like that whole community and supporting another child that with exceptionalities and trying to like work with that. So that's really what I'm going to do for my professional
stuff. Thank you. So I love your choice of the verb embark. Embark on the journey of something that you're really committed to and really passionate about. And I'm just thinking, based on our discussion for the last question, here's another area where there's still a lot of difference in the terminology that people use. You know, we were hoping to move away from special needs. You mentioned exceptionalities. And I think the more recent that I kind of feel connected to is children with diverse abilities. Because even though they may have some challenges and exceptionalities, they also within themselves may have some incredible abilities that we don't spend time learning about and, you know, fostering and promoting. Thank you. Thank you. Derek, what about you in terms of ongoing professional development?
Well, funny enough, I have some friends, colleagues, as well as other ECE educators that are in the middle of doing their bachelor's. And some of the conversations I've actually had with them are just so inspiring. There's, I forget the one course that they mentioned about, but it talks a lot about different people with different backgrounds, different history, and how all that really plays a huge factor when it comes to us as ECE educators. And there's even some things that I didn't even think about for me even being as a male in the ECE field until, you know, they brought up some points where I thought to myself, oh, like that's actually some really good reflection for myself to really think about, digest, and grow with on top of that too. So I would love to just learn more about that. So I thought maybe later on, work a little bit first, and then afterwards, work towards getting my bachelor's, because some of those courses that I'm hearing coming out from what they're learning, it's just, oh, I'm thirsty.
Thirsty and inspired by what you've learned. And I know at a broader level in our universal path to universal childcare, there still remain very few bachelor degree programs even province-wide. So we really want to, grow and build and develop more degree opportunities within the college and university system. And I think, too, your reference to what I like to refer to as the whole issue of nature and nurture, what makes us who we are, what makes young children who they are, what are some of the key factors that may be similar and may be different. So love the pathways and the journeys that both of you plan and hope to embark on. And maybe the next question is related in some regard, because we're asking if you have been able to take advantage of the BC government bursary program to assist with your fees for your studies. And if so, has this been helpful? And do you have any recommendations as to what the government could still do to make early childhood studies a more enticing professional pathway? Tatiana, over to you. Big question. Starting with, were you able to take advantage of the bursary program?
So one of the first bursaries that I did sign up for, I didn't get approved for that bursary just because I didn't put my name and student number in. It wasn't like as clear as I would like it to be that it had to be like the student number and my name had to be in there. So that's something that's kind of like a little bit troublesome with me with that part. But honestly, I feel as though we are very privileged here. I mean, the country that I'm from Lebanon, and in that country, I'm not even gonna tell you, like, teachers there are making $70 an hour, and that's something that people don't know about. And it's $70, like, US an hour.
An
That's it.
hour.
And not an hour, sorry, a month.
Oh, gosh.
So
I
for the
thought
whole.
that's very strange. A month. Whoa.
Yeah, sorry about that. That's a little bit of a shift. But yes, I really do think that this is something that needs to be spoken about, because I feel like we are very privileged here to even have those accommodations for like bursaries and everything, because a lot of countries really don't. And a lot of teachers don't really make as much as we do. So I am grateful, but I do feel as though there are some things that could be a little bit more clear and a little bit more made more aware of. But yeah, I do feel very privileged to be here, because I do have family back home that are teachers, and they're making 70 a month, and
Month.
that's really
Incredible.
not a wage to live by,
Yeah.
right? So
Yeah.
I'm really grateful that we even get that opportunity to have these bursaries.
For sure. And thanks for that and sharing your story that initially, a kind of administrative issue, caused you not to receive the bursary because you didn't put your proper student number on the right line or whatever, whatever. Often, form filling out becomes a challenge. So were you able after that to get some bursary as you went along on the program?
Yes, so I did sign up for the bursary this time as well, and I did send in my transcript. So still waiting for that, fingers crossed.
Waiting, but hoping, hoping, and waiting, as you say, for the new wage grid that we're all looking forward to, especially given your example of teachers and in your family in Lebanon, $70 a month. Whoa.
Yeah, that's why
Okay.
I'm definitely fired up. Because
For sure, fired up.
I did say that in one of your classes, but you know what? I really am fired up, because I really do believe that we do a lot for the children that we work for, and we do deserve more, and other countries deserve more too. And I really do take that into consideration, and I'm very grateful, and I'm not ungrateful, but at the same time, I'm kind of looking at it at a perspective of like different countries, not different countries, different continents of Canada are getting more than we are, and they're getting that wage grid, and we're in school for it. We're studying our asses off. I'm sorry for my language, but you know what? We really are. These semesters were quite difficult for us, and we're studying and we're working at the same time. I have three jobs right now, and I'm working and I'm in school, and I still can't make a living. So honestly, it really is something that's so so worrisome for me, and it's very like it's a challenge, and I really hope that in the future we're able to get more opportunities to get that wage grant and to really get what we deserve.
Absolutely. So respect and remuneration for the work that we do and its importance. And when you said you're working three jobs and going to school, reminding me of the sad joke, why did the early childhood educator have to cross the road? And the answer was to get to her third job. So we be. Yeah. And Derek, over to you. What was your experience with the bursary program? Was it helpful? Did you have some challenges?
At the very beginning, yes, very, very big challenges, only because the website made it very hard and confusing to actually find the application form. When are the due dates? When are you supposed to do all this stuff? And then the amount of times I've gotten emails saying, oh no, it's too late. You can't apply for the bursary or you don't qualify for the bursary, which to me was really devastating. But it wasn't until they actually updated when, ECEBC updated their website, not
Website.
to the online program, but for the before when they actually like the aesthetically it looked really different and it was a lot more easier to navigate. That's when I actually applied for it. And so far I've been really blessed in actually getting money back, which is really good. Every course I've taken so far, I've actually been getting money back, which is nice. From what my understanding is $500 per semester. No, sorry, per course that you can actually receive back, which is nice. And I even had the opportunity to actually attempt to apply for the workforce bursary, which that was a big benefit as well too. I was kind of sad they didn't give me all the lost funds, like they said they would, but it's a bursary. I can understand where that's coming from. But the fact that I got half the amount back for lost funds I didn't work, that I'd say that was a huge, huge, huge benefit for myself
Difference and
when it
benefit.
comes to that. Oh
Yeah.
yes, absolutely. And they made it even more easier just even doing it on the online portal now. It's
Right.
seamless, which is nice. I'm really happy
Which
about it.
is nice. So you make a good point, though, Derek, even though with social media and websites, all different groups and organizations think they're doing their best for the receiver to navigate that system and figure out what now, what later, I didn't get that form, et cetera, and also, I think your second example with the workforce bursary might be a good segue to our last question. Well, there could be 100 more. However, for this podcast, our last question, which says for classmates and those who are planning to undertake early childhood studies, what guidance might you offer them? So, Tatiana, off to you for some thoughts and perspectives about current people in the program or people who are planning and thinking about coming into this professional path.
Well, honestly, I've been in the field for quite a while. Even before I was in school, I volunteered at a before and after school care program, and we did summer camps and stuff like that. But you know what? The one big thing that I would say is stick to your intuition, stick to your gut, and be the teacher that you want to be. Do not let anybody tell you otherwise. You are the educator that you are the person that you want to be in the field. You know what I mean? For me, for example, when I first got into the field, I feel as though I held myself back a whole lot, and I swallowed my tongue, and I didn't say so much when there was something that wasn't exactly 100% within my philosophy. But find your philosophy and stick to it, because when you stick to it, you will be an amazing educator, and you will be the educator that you are meant to be. Do not hold back on anything that you have in your life. Do not hold back. That's the only thing I would say.
Just beautiful. So, We'll come to the very powerful conclusion that of comments you made. Yet I think the whole idea of doing some volunteer work, whether or not it might be a requirement, you know, of your admission to the program, but getting feet on the ground, hands on the ground, at the table, in the sand, to really see if in fact this is the professional path that works for you and that you want to take. And then I loved your line, be the teacher you want to be, because you're absolutely right. Our philosophy then becomes the foundation for our practice, you know, for the theories that we integrate and want to use in the program with the children. New theories, new ideas. That's why I like the term promising practices rather than best practices, because practices can change over time, you know. So over the last while, we've learned so much, for example, about the Reggio philosophy and how that unfolds in the classroom. So stick to it. Thanks, Tatiana. And then over to Derek for some last words.
I actually have to agree with Tatiana as well when it comes to that. Because I've been in that boat myself, actually, trying to more so please other educators in the sense, because when you get into the industry, like there's one way of volunteering, there's one way of doing practicums, there's another one of doing observations for the schooling. But when you're actually working, it's a whole different mindset. And like going between practicum, for example, practicum and actually working, it really is two different things altogether. And there's two different expectations. So for myself, I really tried hard to make sure that, like, not only me learning a lot, well, myself learning a lot, but then at the same time, here I am, I'm also trying to impress all these other educators at the same time, which is not really a good mindset to be in, because you're not here for the other educators. You are here for the children at the end of the day.
Right.
So that's why when it comes to some people, like I know there's a few educators that I was in school with, and they were in a philosophy that they realized it wasn't meant for them at the end of the day. And they just thought, oh, I'm going to go and apply at a childcare job just for the sake of applying for a childcare job. And one thing that I always tell them is that, you know, try other places, try other philosophies, see really what works for you. Because I think when you dive into the very beginning, you're, of course, you're focused on the children, but there's so much more layers that adds on to it. And I don't think a lot of new educators really understand. They fit into this one dynamic, and then they realize that maybe this isn't the right fit for me. I remember the first time working in the field, I had one educator, and this was a whole different philosophy altogether. I had one educator tell me that all childcare centers are the same. All childcare centers are the same. And it's not. And it took me a lot of figuring out and really soul searching to really find where is this childcare center? Because if this is all the same, then, you know, then I don't know, maybe not. Like, I still love working with the children. I love still interacting and inspiring them at the same time. But, you know, there's different centers with different philosophies that have different ways of, you know, how they foster children's development and learning. And by all means, I'm not saying any center is bad. All centers have their own unique passion that really fosters them to such amazing, you know, points in their lives. And I think for us as educators, we really have to make sure that we do have to stay true to ourselves. We still have to stay true to who we are as educators. And one of the best ways we can do it is to find that philosophy. I actually spoke to a practicum student like a while back. And I was going to ask them, like, well, what's your, you know, your philosophy? What's your vision? What's your stuff? And then the answer was, well, I was just going to apply to just some childcare center and just work. And it's like, that's, what I told this educator, or educator in training, is try subbing at different centers and see, with different philosophies, and see which one works for you. Yes, of course, you can observe. yes, you can, go on practicums and experience this different stuff, but it's really nothing like when you're actually working with the children, with the actual team and such. So I just said, yeah, try different centers, see what works for you. Because when you find that your calling and that intuition, then you know exactly where you are supposed to be in this field. So absolutely try different centers, sub at different centers.
Thanks so much, Derek, because that for me really builds, and I think for all of us listening, on Tatiana about, be the teacher you want and mean to be. And yes, there are some elements in the childcare world where one center is very similar to another, yet the philosophy and how it influences the activities, the resources, the environment, the way in which staff interact with children around guiding their behavior, there's so many facets. So I love that you're both saying, right, volunteer, observe, practicums, and yet at the same time, put yourself in these various settings and really see if what's happening in that childcare program integrates and matches with and for you. Wow, what an incredible time we've spent with you. One of the longest, I think, times that we've had over the 18 different interviews that Crystal has mentioned. We're just really grateful that you talked so openly and so freely about your own experience, what brought you into the field, what you're loving and inspired by in the field, some of the professional development, and some of the changes that we all need to make. So, Tatiana and Derek, ever grateful. Thank you. Thank you. And now we'll go back to Crystal.
Thank you, Gita, Tatiana, and Derek, for your inspiring perspective on entering childcare as a spectra career. We need you. We need to clone you for sure. That was really inspiring. I'm fired up and so optimistic, knowing that the childcare sector has bright lights like you working in it. It gives me a lot of hope and inspiration, and we hope that this interview reaches all of you who are wondering if childcare is the right career path for you and the opportunities it can bring. I hope you feel empowered to be the teacher you want to be and to be true to yourself. So thank you to our listeners for joining us again in this latest series of interviews following the path to universal childcare. And once again, bravo to you, Derek and Tatiana. You are our leaders for your peers for sure. And I know without question that our paths will cross again. All the best. Thank you, everybody.
Absolute assets to our early childhood profession. Bravo.
Yes. Maybe
Thank
in a few
you so
years
much.
we'll interview you again, right?
Yes. For
I'm totally
jobs.
down for it.
5 years. No, earlier.
They already signed up.
I really want to add one note at the end. Like, this is something I really had to reflect on for the longest time. Like, look at yourself as a child. How would you like to be treated? How would you like
Yes.
to be educated? And then you take that and you put that into the field, and you're gonna have all the power in the field. That's the most important thing, I think. Just think about how you want to be treated.
Great words to
Agreed.
end on. Thank you. Thank you.
I couldn't agree more. I think of myself as a child every day, and whenever I see other children and how I can really connect with them in that sense of, me putting myself in their shoes, it makes a big difference. It really
It's number
does.
one.
That's how you know this is
Wonderful.
your calling and this is your passion. And that's why you get fired up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fired up.
We all
Fired up.
are.
Wonderful.
Thanks again. And your last statement, Derek, really highlights the issue of empathy. Put
Yes.
yourself in child shoes. And Bobby,
Wonderful.
okay.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll see you next time. So please
Perfect.
remember to listen to our podcast, and we'll see you again. Bye, everyone.